The most interactive sports talk show in Houston continues now.
What's happening, Paul?
What's up, Paul?
Most interactive show, and really enjoy that aspect of it. Y'all keep it up.
Get involved in the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776. Here's Paul Gallant.
He's been playing the 5,000 forever. Spins it out to Porter. Is open. His three. It's good. Back to back for the Rockets to start the second OT.
I got to say, that was a fun game last night. And I know we don't talk a whole lot of Rockets basketball. I would like to change that. And if they continue to play the way that they played against the Philadelphia 76ers last night, at the very least, we will have something to get us back to Astros baseball in a couple of months. I haven't been back to Toyota Center to cover a Rockets game in, shoot, I want to say 2019, probably 2.5 years. It's been a really long time since I've been back to Toyota Center. I think it was a Rockets playoff game the same day as the Kentucky Derby. Was it against the Golden State Warriors and Kevin Durant? I think it was. It's been a while. So went back, and I'm not expecting much. But I was hoping that the Rockets would be competitive with James Harden back in the building for the Philadelphia 76ers. And look, Harden was supposed to have his minutes limited last night. He's a bit banged up. But oh boy, he was limited. I'm not going to lie. Watching Harden just stink up and down the court was full-on porn for your boy. He was 4 for 19 from the field, 7 turnovers, flops that didn't draw foul calls, getting animated with the referees. There was one point where I think he assaulted Tony Brothers. Okay? It's my interpretation of it. But if these refs are all of a sudden being sticklers for stopping players in games from being complete jackwagons, they probably should have teed up James Harden in that one spot. Harden got swatted at the buzzer by Kevin Porter Jr. Oh my God. To see Harden struggle like that was glorious. And you know what? And I've said this a million times before, but I think I finally have my closure with James Harden. So my plan was, after the game, I was going to go into the locker room and I was going to ask Harden, has this gone the way you hoped since you left? And I walked into the Sixers locker room. I saw Joel Embiid talking. I respect Joel Embiid. I like Joel Embiid as a player. And Embiid was a monster last night. And he fouled out. It's a good thing he fouled out. I don't know if they would have won if he was out for this, if he wasn't out for the second overtime. But I saw Embiid, and then I saw Harden, and I just thought to myself, you know what? I don't really care what he has to say. And asking a question that honestly would just serve the point of annoying him, is that worth it on a night where I should probably be talking to some of these young Rockets players? So I had a moment of growth, guys. I think my pettiness is in the rearview mirror. He's never going to win there. He's not good anymore. And I think it's over. Now you focus on the Houston Rockets. Man, look, I'm not acting like anything's going to happen this year. I think, though, that they are a watchable product based off of what I saw last night. And it's one game, but they've been playing a little bit better of late. Steven Silas, their head coach, was asked after the game about the confidence this team has been building. They had a nice win over Phoenix on Friday, though that had some moments at the very end that made you clutch your pearls, and they had a win against Atlanta not too long ago that saw Trae Young yapping up a storm, and the Rockets were making fun of Trae Young. They've been getting a little confidence. Here's what Steven Silas had to say about the win and the way they've been playing of late.
Shoot, a month ago we probably wouldn't have won this game, and we stayed in it and got confidence as the game went along and stayed with it, and we continued to do that, continue to harp on the same things as far as playing hard and playing together.
132-123 in double overtime, they win. You could tell after the game, Jalen Green, Kevin Porter Jr. were gassed. Both of them told us that this is like the longest game that they've ever played in. And they played the majority of it, 44 minutes apiece. There's a lot of warts for this team. They need a ball handler in the worst way. Careless turnovers. You do see the occasional body language antics, specifically from Alperen Şengün. That guy is constantly whining up and down the court. But he did play well, especially considering he was going up against Joel Embiid. He had a couple of clutch offensive rebounds. Kevin Porter Jr. had a couple of moments, too, where he injured his leg. He was limping around. It seemed like he was embellishing it. He got hit in the face. Same thing. But I felt like he shook those moments off. And the two of them, it's working. It's watchable. It's not ideal. That's for damn sure. And there are some dumb moments, dumb passes. You had Sean Mapes. I know what your reaction was and that the broadcast reaction was. They get a breakaway steal from James Harden to ice the game with like a thunderous dunk. And you're hoping you're going to see it. And then all of a sudden, they decide, you know what? I could just dunk this. Jalen Green's inner monologue. But how about I throw this up for an alley-oop? And it was just an absolute catastrophe of a play.
Yeah, he tosses it like just behind him. There's no one between him and the basket. He jumps up, tosses it behind him. And the problem is that between him and KJ Martin, there was, I forgot if it was Shake Melton or D'Anthony Melton. That was kicking my ass all night.
Yeah.
They have a Milton and a Melton. One of them tipped it. And I was saying on the broadcast, Ackerman and Ryan Hollins, you would thought that like a baby was running around with scissors. The way that they reacted, they're like, oh my God, no. Jalen, don't do that.
But I'm glad that they did say that. And I do hope that they learn from that. Because these are all children. Like they are deer straight out the womb. A bunch of Bambis out there. And I will give them credit, though. I was on the Twitch, it was said, Kevin Porter Jr. Yeah, he looks better. I was willing to give him a fresh start after the comments that I heard from him this offseason. You'll believe it when you see it, but I do think I'm seeing a player who is growing up a little bit. I still think that contract's a little crazy just considering his past, but maybe he has finally figured it all out. I will say one thing. I don't want to see Knicks on the court ever again. That guy's terrible.
Not big Deshaun Knicks guy?
He is awful. I was sitting next to a couple other people on press row, and they were all like, oh my God, Knicks. Oh my God, Knicks. Yeah, he is bad. That is the one guy on this team that I'm like, okay, I have no patience for you. Tariq Eason, yeah. Kevin it's Martin Kari. Jr., even though you're... It's my bad. Kevin Martin Jr.,
It's Kenyon Martin.
My bad. Hang on. I'm still trying to figure out all the names, okay? This is my first game back. Shut up, Sean. But you're right. I'd like to see those guys more, even if Kenyon Martin Jr. is requesting a trade during the offseason.
I don't know if he ever rescinded that. I don't know if it's still out there. Raphael Stone just forgot.
You know why I'm thinking of, too, Kevin Martin Jr.?
Because he was a Rocket legend?
Don't say that.
He helped get them James Harden.
Shut up. Kevin Martin made me dislike basketball because he was one of the first players that I remember watching on a daily basis. And I'm like, this guy is just the epitome of all I hate, where like clearly thinks that he's the best player on the team, is not that good, so should probably take a chill pill about it. Sat out a bunch of games because Goran Dragic and Kyle Lowry were playing more than him. And like obviously those guys have had better careers than Kevin Martin did. This was back during the 2011 season. So whenever I think of Kevin Martin, I get a little bit triggered. Joel Blank will confirm with me. Because when I was back when we were both over at the then Rockets flagship, I would cut up highlights for Joel and we would basically talk about some of the players that we didn't like, and I would just bitch and moan about Kevin Martin all the time. And he like sat out in 2011 for a long time for reasons unbeknownst to anybody. But anyway, yesterday, Sean, and again, a moment of growth for me. You were wearing a James Harden Brooklyn Nets jersey entirely to troll me. And, you know, just like with last night where I didn't ask a trolly question to James Harden in the locker room after the game. You know, tough question, Paul here. I also didn't respond to that jersey, but it's because I did not see that you were wearing the jersey.
Yeah, it was because I snuck it in there.
I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
I couldn't see
and
it.
And the way I'm sitting, like, I was also wearing a black undershirt, so it all just blended in, I think.
It
so,
did.
Yeah.
It did a little bit. So you wore this jersey.
Yes, after the show as well.
Right. But.
And I, yeah, on the drive home, the Trey Turner news happened, and so that's why we're talking about it today. And then we also, I was driving, I went to pick up Chipotle, and as I was pulled in, I parked. And then I looked down to get my phone between my legs or something, and I saw that I was still wearing the James Harden jersey. And I thought about it. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to take this off. I don't need the people at Chipotle, not just Chipotle, my like home Chipotle.
Ooh.
I don't need them associating my face with James Harden. Didn't want them to be like, oh, that guy, big James Harden guy, spitting his burrito next time.
I'm proud of you. That's good. More people should be willing to not wear Harden stuff. And I got to say, crowd last night delivered. You guys were on Harden's case for the most part. I thought there would be a lot more warmness towards James Harden. No, you guys were a lot, in fact, more hostile, I think, about James Harden than Texans fans were for Deshaun Watson. And Watson was getting booed every single play.
To be fair, Texans fans are like dead bodies now. They're mummies. Like, they're not going to – they can't feel emotions. So the Rockets, I mean, they still have – I think the difference between the Rockets and the Texans is that the Rockets actually have, like, fun players that you can at least sell as the future, where the Texans, it's Jalen Petrie, who's very good, but he's a safety, and a cornerback, Stingley, who's been
not
hurt
playing
half the year.
Right. And Damian Pierce.
Damian Pierce, who's a running back.
Yes.
In 2022.
Hey, that's racist against running backs.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Running backs do matter.
Okay. Yeah, I love Rex Burkhead. Don't get me wrong.
Okay, now we're moving on. Dari Ogunbowale, although he shouldn't be getting the ball either on the goal line. Can we stop giving the ball to guys who aren't Damian Pierce?
Can we get a little bit more Eno Benjamin?
Great question. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. College football six-pack up next. Who are your Heisman finalists, and why wasn't this guy invited to New York City? And Deion Sanders is the head coach at Colorado. Oh, my God. This is going to be fun. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
In 1930, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to alleviate the effects of the...
Time to put down the books and crack open a college football six-pack.
We're going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium. Come on, everybody!
With Paul Gallant.
Let's do it.
Let's do it!
So we do know what the college football playoff is going to be. Georgia is number one, Michigan number two, TCU number three, and Ohio State number four. We also know who the Heisman Trophy finalists are for Saturday's presentation of the award. Georgia's Stetson Bennett, USC's Caleb Williams, TCU's Max Duggan, Ohio State's CJ Stroud. Now, I'm not one that pays very close attention to college football statistics because they can get so out of whack with some of those extremely pass-heavy teams and run-heavy teams across the sport. But shouldn't Hendon Hooker have been invited? Shouldn't Bryce Young have been invited? Am I crazy and being surprised that those two weren't invited? I mean, it does seem like, hey, we're really just inviting everybody from across the sport, but I don't really feel like any of these four are an extreme front runner. Do you, Sean? I'm looking at this and I'm a little underwhelmed, and maybe that's unfair, and maybe I'm looking at it through my NFL prism as I always do, but is it because Bryce Young was hurt? Is it because Hendon Hooker's hurt now?
I think part of it is that Hendon Hooker got hurt. A, got hurt, and B, they lost by a million to South Carolina. And it feels like the college football like world was just like, all right, we can forget about Tennessee now. Their quarterback's hurt, and they have two losses. Who cares? But, yeah, Hendon Hooker probably I think should definitely be in over Stetson Bennett, who I can't even get mad at.
I want Stetson Bennett to win it now.
I can't get mad at the writers also putting Stetson Bennett in it because it is such a like throwback college football thing, and I can't wait for in 5 years when C.J. Stroud is a NFL starting quarterback, when Caleb Williams is the number one pick, and we're like, who else was in that Heisman Trophy finalist? It's Max Duggan and Stetson Bennett.
It's underwhelming.
That's going to be a little treat for us 5 years from now.
Maybe we should start a campaign for one of these two. Stetson Bennett winning the Heisman after winning that national title. I hope Stetson Bennett gets it. I want Stetson Bennett to be just set for life because it's been a fun couple of months, year plus for Stetson Bennett.
I will say it is a little late to start the campaign considering all the votes have been
They're already done.
Sent in, so... Yeah, that's how we know who the finalists are. But yeah, no.
Shut up!
Stetson Bennett's had a great last, like you said, 18 months.
Seriously!
Of life, because remember last year, every time Stetson Bennett, like, did anything remotely wrong.
What an underdog story.
And Georgia, like, only won by 17 instead of 27. People were like, bring in JT Daniels. Like, he just was constantly had to look over his shoulder last year. And yeah, so now he's the Heisman finalist. I'm not sure if he's going to win. I think Caleb Williams pretty much has it wrapped up. So, yeah.
But can the Heisman Trust welcome in a man who is wearing F-U-C-K-U-T-A-H on his fingers?
You could say Utah. You don't have to spell out the word Utah.
That's a curse word, too. They don't allow alcohol there or caffeine. It is... You're giving me a face. You're not responding. Fine. I'm still saying
it. I don't think it warrants a response.
This is what it said on his fingers, Sean, okay? He is not Heisman worthy.
Oh, man. Imagine what's going to be written on his fingers when he wins the Heisman. All time. That's when we need the internet to zoom in. When he's holding up the Heisman, zoom in on his fingers. See what they say.
The only person that he would be capable of saying bleep in the Heisman finalists would be C.J. Stroud, so he could say F-U-C-K-S-T-R-O-U-D with his 10 fingers.
He could do Max for Duggan.
I guess you would. I think you would have to. Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. You could do it with Duggan too. But like, I feel like Stroud's his biggest competition. No.
Losing the Michigan game and also not playing well in it. I think that's the thing with Caleb. He played well in the Utah game, and they just couldn't tackle anyone.
Gotcha. Okay.
And he also was playing hurt, which is a lot of legacy points.
Oh, okay. I don't know, though. Character concerns.
Yeah, maybe. Honestly, now that we're talking about it, maybe the fingernails things actually does cost him votes, which, again, I love how stupid this award is. Because, like you said, you can't look at stats, really, because everyone – like, what Stetson Bennett does is wildly different than what Hendon Hooker does.
Yeah. Hey, what else do we have here? Oh! Deion Sanders, officially the head coach of Colorado, and this is going to be a lot of fun. So, first off, Deion Sanders had an introductory, I guess, speech to the players for the Colorado Buffs. It was like 13, 14 minutes or so. Get a load of this part of the speech.
We got a few positions already taken care of because I'm bringing my luggage with me. And it's Louis. Okay. It ain't going to be no more of the mess that these wonderful fans, the student body, and some of your parents have put up with for probably 2 decades now.
Some of your parents?
I'm coming. And when I get here, it's going to be changed. So I want y'all to get ready to go ahead and jump in that portal and do whatever you're going to get. Because the more you jump in, the more room you make. Because we bring kids that are smart. Say that, smart.
Smart.
Tough.
Wow. And I mean, he has them fully indoctrinated. He's saying, look, I'm bringing some players with me to this school. If you are even thinking about getting in the transfer portal, get in right now. I wonder who gets cut, because there's probably got to be some players who are like, no, I'm staying. I'm not leaving. How does that work? that would be an uncomfortable situation to be in. That said, Colorado has been a disaster for a while. Sanders is not entirely wrong with what he said there. So I want to see what happens on that front. Then you had Deion Sanders at his introductory press conference announcing his son as the starting quarterback. Immediately.
Son, Junior, stand up. Yeah. He does all our social media, so all the stuff you've been seeing, that's him. The profanity is him as well. Is it? Where's Shador? Shador? And this is your quarterback, all right? He's going to have to earn it. Don't believe that.
Is he?
He's going to have to earn it. Yeah, the quarterback's going to have to earn it. The safety made me mad, so I didn't bring him. His brother. He's in my doghouse right now.
Already in the Deion Sanders doghouse. That's going to be interesting. Now, the big problem for Colorado might be this, as admitted by the athletic director of Colorado, Rick George. The $29.5 million over 5 years. Well, here he is, Rick George.
How did you come up with enough money to get this guy?
Well, look, we don't have the money yet, but I know we'll have it. So I'm not worried about that piece.
How does that work? Have you watched what's that movie, that Adam Sandler movie where he's a degenerate gambler on Netflix?
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems? Huh? Have you seen Uncut Gems? Huh? I mean, he doesn't have the money. If you don't have the money, I don't know if you would potentially be on the hook for said money to the point that Adam Sandler's character was in that movie. Spoiler alert. But you might want to get that money somehow, some way. I don't think it's going to be easy for them to get $29.5 million just given how depressing that football program's been over the years.
But the bet he's making is that Deion Sanders is going to get the people going. It's going to open up some pocketbook. I mean, they went 1-11 this year. I feel like that deserves to be mentioned. This was legitimately one of the worst Power 5 teams in all of college football.
And they have been for a while. It's crazy because they were great in the 90s. As brought up on Twitch, they've been bad since Cordell Stewart left. Since Ted Johnson left. My buddy, now up in Boston, used to work with me at the flagship, former Patriot. Michael Robinson, too, I think was the guy who caught that Hail Mary touchdown pass from Cordell Stewart against Michigan, I think it was. They used to be so good. I think they did a 30 for 30 on the Colorado program in the early 90s. I might have to watch that again in the near future. Man, I miss good college football 30 for 30s. Just a side note. Anyway, one last thing to touch on. Nick Saban on Saturday was making the rounds before the college football playoff selection show on Sunday and was asked about Alabama, whether they should be a part of it.
And what I would say to the committee or anyone else is if we played any of these teams that are on the edge or getting in, would we be the underdog or would we be the favorite?
That's pathetic.
I like it because it's like the opposite of what Nick Saban says before games, where he's like, don't tell us how great we are. That's rat poison. And now he's like, look at it. Vegas loves us. What are you talking about? Also, they were like 7.5-point favorites against Tennessee. And I'm sure they're favored against LSU as well.
Right. They've been favored against a lot of teams this year.
And they've lost.
Oh, they're not SEC schools. You know, this is different in the SEC. You know, Texas and Oklahoma are about to find that out the hard way.
Okay, Nick. It's been an underwhelming Alabama year. Like Bryce Young's the only reason that they even got to the point that they did. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. That's your college football six-pack every single Tuesday at 11:15. Coming up next, how much of a role does Dusty Baker have when it comes to the Astros and the decisions that they are making with their roster? Have you even thought about that before? Dusty Baker spoke at the winter meetings in wherever the hell they are. I'll be honest, I don't know. You will hear from him next. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Houston's most interactive and possibly radioactive sports talk show continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
We got the World Cup on in the background, the TV in studio. Morocco and Spain are playing one another. They do have an interesting history between the two, but I was talking about it on the Twitch show, twitch.tv/ESPN975. You ever want real tangents? Just talking about how historically, pound for pound, in an argument that would include, yes, the United States and would include England, Spain gets forgotten as one of the biggest a-holes of all time in terms of world powers, because the 1500s, they were legitimately the worst. They were kicking Muslims out of their country. They were burning people at the stake. They were killing Protestants across Europe, trying to invade Protestant countries, and also bleeping up the New World too. Spain, bad. And, I mean, you still get like little hints of all the bad things that they did, like their caste system and all the racism that they did. So whenever people say, hey, the United States is racist, say, well, hey, what about Spain in the 1500s / all the way to today?
And including today, fast forward to today, they're in PKs with Morocco.
PKs against Morocco.
That's the news tie-in for the 1500s little lesson we got.
But twitch.tv/ESPN975 if you want real tangents. I had an interesting conversation last night while at the Rockets game with Ben DeBose, who covers the Rockets. You can check him out online. I make fun of Ben a lot for getting mad at the refs, but Ben's a nice guy. So we were talking about the Rockets. I was like, hey, what's going on with the Rockets this year? But we were also talking about the Houston Astros, and he brought up a couple of interesting points about the Astros when we were talking about them. And we heard from Dusty Baker yesterday at the winter meetings in San Diego. I'm going to ask you this question. How much power do you think Dusty Baker has in the grand scheme of things with the Houston Astros right now? Have you thought about how much power Dusty Baker might have? There were a couple of rumors this offseason, or I suppose facts, that were reported in, I believe, a podcast where the broadcasters for the World Series talked about how Dusty Baker had been hard pressing for the Astros to move Jeremy Peña into the number two spot in the lineup all season long. They move him there. You see what the results were in the postseason. There was also the story about how Dusty Baker at the last second stepped in to nix the Wilson Contreras trade. Maybe it's because he's up there in age. Maybe it's because of the way baseball is, where it seems like general managers have all the power and managers don't. You underestimate the kind of say that Baker has in the organization. But at the winter meetings, Baker shared how involved he actually is when it comes to the decisions that the Houston Astros make.
I mean, they ask me questions, and you know, they're not doing a whole bunch without at least having me involved. And I spent a lot of time talking to Jim Crane, also talking to Bagwell, talking to Enos, and also talking to Giles a little bit.
Remember when Jeff Bagwell last week said that baseball needs more humans in a nutshell? Some of that's coming from Jeff Bagwell, the old school player. But with James Click now out of the picture, you got to wonder how much of that rhetoric could have been coming from Dusty Baker as well. And I think Baker did a very good job of being a politician, if you will, after the season was done when it comes to anything involving James Click. It does really feel like this was a Jim Crane decision entirely, and maybe a little influence from Jeff Bagwell, who's supposedly Crane's right-hand man. But I think we've just been forgetting that Dusty Baker has a lot of say, and with good reason, based off of some of the decisions, first off, he just made from a lineup perspective in the playoffs, maybe not so much in the regular season, and some of the other stories that have come out about things that Dusty Baker has pushed for. I'm sure there are other things Baker pushed for that would have been a disaster that the Astros decided not to do, or that he pushed for that didn't work out so well. Whatever the case, Baker clearly has some influence in this organization. He also talked about vetoing the Wilson Contreras trade at the trade deadline this year.
Well, at the time, it's not that I didn't want him. It's just at the time, I didn't think that it was a proper fit with 2 months to go in the season. You know what I mean? And then you got to learn your pitching staff. You got to learn, you know, how we go about doing things. And I didn't feel that there was enough time, you know, to do that. Now, going forward, I mean, yeah, we're going to talk to him. And, you know, we have interest in him. And if the numbers are right and the years are right and the situation is right, then right for both of us.
That means that Wilson Contreras is still an option. And I'm curious as to how they would use him in the lineup. I think it was the Ken Rosenthal piece about the Astros' interest in Wilson Contreras, where it was suggested that Contreras, who has played in left field before, could actually end up playing a little bit of left field, perhaps platooning with Yordan Alvarez in that role. As far as Yordan Alvarez, where do you expect to see him next year? Well, this does impact what the Astros do in their decisions the next couple of weeks. How hard are they going to pursue some perhaps outfield alternative or spare bat, spare glove to compete with Chaz McCormick or just overtake Chaz McCormick as the center fielder? If you do find someone who could play a little left field too, optimally, you can move McCormick there from time to time. But I am curious as to how much Yordan Alvarez is going to play left field. Alvarez said last year, hey, I want to play a little more left field to keep me a little more engaged on a day-to-day basis. Here's what Dusty Baker had to say about Alvarez, the left fielder.
I don't know, probably 65-70% of the time. But again, the key word is ideal, you know. And depends on how he feels. And he's getting better. And he enjoys playing the outfield.
There's no doubt about the latter two. He has gotten, I think, better as an outfielder. And if he likes playing out there, there's no harm in putting him out there. If you're in left field, it's not like there's a massive risk of injury on every single play. And it's not like you're messing your knees up either, which, you know, if you're a catcher, that is brutal. You're just standing in a squat position for an entire game. That's a lot of... a lot of weight to be putting on your knees, especially with how big some of these catchers are across baseball.
As defensive positions go in baseball, left field is probably the least stressful of the outfield, at least. And then it's because of that, it's less stressful on the field.
Especially at Minute Maid Park, where the only really tricky spot in left field is right where the Crawford boxes turn into that little weird, like, right angle, and it goes back to where the bullpen is. Like, that part of the park is tricky. But you're hoping that, like, nothing gets to that spot. It's just going to go yard, or it's going to
fall off the wall, yeah.
Right, or it's going to go into Yordan's glove or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think Baker's got a lot of influence in this organization, and maybe we should have been highlighting that, as there was so much... I think slander might not be the right word because it might be a difficult place to work, but Jim Crane was catching a lot of strays over the last couple of weeks for moving on from James Click and for having Jeff Bagwell as a key advisor. And maybe because of Baker's one-year contract, it's hard to believe that Baker has a lot of influence. But it's clear Baker has a lot of influence, and I don't know, maybe this isn't the best way to think about things, but I actually like that Baker has that kind of influence. I would rather Baker have a little extra influence than Jeff Bagwell. And when it comes to evaluating players who are on the open market, maybe not, because, I mean, this is the same Dusty Baker who has forgotten who, like, Shane McClanahan is among other players across baseball. Like, I've never seen him pitch. I've never watched him. I've never heard of him. And I have no problem with him doing that. You're a manager on a night-to-night basis. How much of an opportunity do you have to actually watch baseball when you're off the clock? How much would you want to watch baseball teams that aren't yours when you're off the clock? So outside, I think, perspective, that's something with Dusty Baker that I don't really care that much about what he brings to the table there. That said, I do think it's good that Jim Crane is listening to him. And if this brain trust has equality across of it, across all of it. With some of the folks who are in the analytical side of things, with Jeff Bagwell, with Dusty Baker. Like, this is not the disaster that some have painted it to be, the Astros front office structure. Interesting to hear Dusty Baker's thoughts on it, and I think it's clear that Baker does have a good amount of influence. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Earlier today, and you can check it out on the Paul Gallant Show podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, we talked with Chris Landry about some of the top prospects in the NFL draft and what the Texans should be thinking about with what will likely be the first overall pick and right now the 13th overall pick from Cleveland. There is perhaps another alternative at quarterback who has just declared himself for the NFL draft. We'll tell you who that is next. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Houston's most interactive and possibly radioactive sports talk show continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Morocco just beat Spain in the World Cup. Fantastic. As I said before, Spain, one of the worst countries in human history. So you hate to see them lose to Morocco. Morocco's goalie just went out of his mind, out of body experience with all those saves in the penalty kicks. So 3-0, Spain loses to Morocco in penalty kicks. Morocco on to the final eight. Morocco got further than the United States.
But the U.S. and Spain completely level.
That's true.
Equal soccer nations.
That's a great point, Sean. I like that spin zone. For more soccer takes like this, Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis. Might be a little more insight involved with those takes as opposed to me just telling you the history of this country and why they stink. And why if somebody from that country tells you that the United States stinks, you say, hey, that's not how it actually goes.
What about Hernan Cortez?
Yeah, Hernando Cortez. What he did with the Aztecs, messed up.
Canceled.
He should be canceled. Not cool to kidnap Montezuma like that. Not cool. Anyway, what else do we have to discuss? Oh, breaking news in the NFL. The Tennessee Titans fired general manager John Robinson. And I'm guessing that this move has a lot to do with the fact that A.J. Brown, formerly a Tennessee Titan, just had 2 touchdowns, could have been 3 touchdowns against the Eagles this past Sunday, including what might have been the most wide open touchdown of all time. Negotiations between Brown and the Titans got contentious essentially from day one. And you also heard Mike Vrabel say that as long as I'm the head coach of the Titans, A.J. Brown will be a player for this team. You heard A.J. Brown say, I wanted to retire a Titan. There's a long, long, long list of reasons as to why fingers might be getting pointed at John Robinson. I do think it's pretty funny to see a general manager get fired less than 2 days after losing to a player he just traded. I mean, that would be essentially, like, say James Harden played well last night for the Philadelphia 76ers and Raphael Stone is the one who pulls the trigger on the James Harden trade to Brooklyn, and Harden plays well, and they fire Raphael Stone after the game. Like, that's the same thing. It doesn't seem like the smartest of moves, but I kind of respect it. That was a bad move by the Titans this offseason. One last quick story to hit on. I did say that we know one of the quarterbacks who has officially declared for the NFL draft. It's Florida Gators quarterback Anthony Richardson. Chris Landry, who joined us earlier today, said on his Twitter, at Landry Football, against the advice of pretty much everybody, Anthony Richardson has declared for the 2023 NFL draft. He has a lot of potential, I think. You've seen a couple of incredible highlights out of the guy. I do think that people need to remember that a couple of wow plays by a quarterback, that's not a reason to draft the guy. It's all about consistency. What are you on a week-to-week level? Richardson is unbelievably inconsistent. And as someone who watches the Florida Gators, because I like the Gators, I would lean against drafting Anthony Richardson until like the fourth or the fifth round or something like that. And I don't think he would be available that long.
Could he be on the Malik Willis, Jordan Love timeline?
The Love thing I don't get, because I don't know what it was about Jordan Love that blew everybody away to the point he was a first-round pick.
He should not have been a first-round pick, especially one with a guy who'd go on to win two straight MVPs.
I get that move at the time, by the way, though. Aaron Rodgers was playing poorly that season, so it wasn't like that crazy.
It's a little bit like the Patriots Tom Brady's last season with the Patriots, where it's like, okay, you can see he's kind of tailing off. It's not crazy that you kind of ended, you know, Belichick wants to move on or the Packers want to move on. It's not insane. The insane part was trading up to go get Jordan Love.
That was the bad part about that one, 100%. Richardson and Willis, I do think, though, Sean, to your question, I think that those are similar kind of prospects in that there's a lot to like, and he's going to do things that are exciting to watch, but you also saw Malik Willis, quarterback of the Titans, against the Houston Texans. Another game where, like, just an absolute ass quarterback performance, you lost to it. Deshaun Watson, the most recent example. So there you go. 713-780-3776 if you have any final thoughts, texts, calls, etc. It is time for garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Sean, have you ever seen on Amazon Prime the TV show 000?
No, I have not.
Fantastic show. I think they're going to do a second season. It's a very dark, realistic seeming look at the cocaine trade from a bunch of different perspectives in different parts of the world. Italian mafia, smuggler and shipping people, Mexican, in like the, I guess, barrio, like some random like gangster who's like working his way up. It's a pretty fascinating watch. I saw this headline and started thinking about that show and how I might want to rewatch it again. European authorities launched a massive sting operation that took down 49 high-ranking super cartel members in 6 different countries, responsible for 1/3 of the world's cocaine trade. I wonder how many people are going to die because of that. Don't you? I mean, geez, 1/3 of the people behind, or check that. 1/3 of the world's cocaine trade had to do with these 49 suspects.
And you know, the other 2/3 of the world's cocaine trade are like, about to make some extra money.
More money for me and you. Anyway, 000, good show. Just wanted to give you a little recommendation before we hit the road. Also, in garbage time, did you see the poor German women, the wives and girlfriends of soccer players in Germany? Since Germany lost and they're having a tough time, there's been a bunch of essentially hit pieces in German newspapers about how the wives and girlfriends didn't have enough fun. Bild, Germany's paper of record, had a headline reading, "What's wrong with our wags?" The German wives and girlfriend, they claimed, had much less fun than the partners of England and Wales, who could drink Qatar dry. Not thirsty? Dancing leg allergy? Don't feel like lunging? Actual things written in the German newspaper. So, Germany down bad already, after not advancing to the elimination stage of the World Cup, and they're blaming it on the wives and girlfriends. Do you think that's fair?
How much do you have to drink to drink Qatar dry? It's not exactly Madison, Wisconsin.
Like one shot of Jaeger.
Yeah.
I remember my senior prom party. Someone had found out all of the places that we were potentially going to go in our high school for our post-senior prom party. So we had nowhere to go, and we went to one person's house, and between like 100 people at the party, we had one bottle of Jaeger. It was like the biggest buzzkill. Anyway, I'm Paul Gallant. This has been the Paul Gallant Show. That was Sean Mapes behind the glass. Big thanks to everybody who tunes in. If you haven't already, subscribe to the Paul Gallant Show podcast, Apple Podcasts, and on Spotify. We are done. Back at it tomorrow at 10. The Killer Bees are up next. So long, farewell, and have yourselves a wonderful Tuesday.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7, that's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.